It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we look at the economic benefits that the arts bring to Wisconsin communities, according to our next two guests.
First, there's been a lot of concern about income inequality in the United States and around the world. Miles Little set out to document extreme wealth and extreme poverty in the world with photographs. The result is a photography exhibition and a book called 1%.
Miles Little joined us on Central Time earlier this year. He's a senior editor at Time Magazine and curator of the 1% Project. Miles, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, what were you looking to document with your new book and exhibit, The 1% Project?
I wanted to show wealth all around the world present day, but in maybe a more nuanced or complete way than you would typically see in, you know, the movies or in caricature. I wanted to show not only opulence, but also education and work and leisure and family, religion, and additionally talk a little bit about sort of the hollowing out of the middle class and the working class as well.
And in the foreword to your book, you write that we think we understand wealth, as you said, through TV, through tabloids, but that we're really only seeing a drop in the bucket. What did you mean by that?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you ask a typical person on the street, you know, give me an example of a really rich person. A lot of people might, you know, say an athlete, because in America, athletes are paid really high. So I did a little research and found out that in 2014, the highest paid athlete in the world was the boxer Floyd Mayweather, and he made, pardon me if I'm getting the number wrong, but $105 million, which is a lot of money. But I compared that to the highest paid hedge fund manager in the world, a guy who is, for all intents and purposes, unknown to the average man or woman on the street. A guy named Kenneth Griffin, who made $1.3 billion in 1 year. So we don't have a great sense of how rich the rich are.
Right. There's a statistic in your book that actually even surprised a few of us here in the media at Wisconsin Public Radio. And I guess someone had asked average people on the street what they thought the pay-to-pay ratio was between the top-tier CEOs in the world and ordinary people. And most people said, I think, something like 30 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
And the real answer was 350 to 1.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing, right? So I make one, and he or she up there makes 350.
Yeah. Things like that are interesting to document. So how did you go about getting that on film so that people could actually see what we're talking about and not just hear numbers like that?
So I did a lot of, I just sort of dove down that rabbit hole of online photo research, you know, going to websites of photographers I respect, maybe going to a photo agency like Magnum, which has a great online digital archive. Also doing text research, reading books, reading articles to make sure that what I'm searching for is relevant. Again, I didn't want this to be nothing but photos of fancy cars or big houses. I wanted to really try to enter the world of modern-day finance, for instance, peer into the lives of the Russia's elite, for example. There's a great project by Anna Skladman, Portraits of the Children of the Wealthy of Russia, which happens to be actually the number one most unequal developed country in the world. I read a statistic that said something like 110 billionaires control maybe about a third of all wealth in the country. Occasionally, there would be a photographer I would discover for this project through a coworker. I am a photo editor at Time Magazine, where I commission covers and features, although this project is very much a personal, independent project. And so, you know, in the day-to-day of my job, I, you know, I'll hear about a great new photographer from a coworker, for instance. But the majority of the photos were found simply alone doing that web research.
Well, when we see TV shows about super wealthy people, or maybe we see the insides of their homes in magazines, it's hard, I think, for anybody not to sort of just admire that and to want that for yourself.
Yeah.
And is
yeah.
that why that you decided to include people who are living in poverty at the other end of the spectrum alongside the super wealthy?
Yeah, great point. There is an undeniable allure to wealth, and I think the sort of beautiful craftsmanship that I hope you see in the photos sort of hints at that. You know, we're seeing beautiful infinity pool on the top of a hotel in Singapore. That's the image on the cover. We're seeing gorgeous, opulent opera houses and things like that. It is undeniably attractive. But it was absolutely important to balance that out by talking about pressures on the American middle class. For example, you know, the decline of the manufacturing base that once sort of created the American middle class, that is hinted at in the book. We're also seeing a little trace here or there of the poor. There's an amazing picture from South Africa by Michael Subotsky of people who are rummaging around in a rubbish dump for, trying to get food or new belongings. And I think a little bit of darkness amidst all this beauty and allure, I think, makes a very powerful statement. A little bit of darkness offset by a lot of lightness almost seems that much more dark.
We're talking with Miles Little right now. He's a senior photo editor at Time Magazine and the curator of the 1% Project. It's a book and also an exhibition documenting the super wealthy around the world and also poverty around the world. Let's talk a little bit more about the photographs. There's one fascinating photograph of a congregation at a church that you say Jesus believes that Jesus wants people to be wealthy and the people there. Can you tell us about that picture?
Mm-hmm. This is by a great documentary photographer named Nina Berman, and it's a church in Atlanta, Georgia, I believe, that preaches the prosperity gospel. Now, what that means is that God wants us to be rich and be prosperous, and the preacher was tremendously successful. He had thousands, if not tens of thousands, of followers and made millions of dollars off of this congregation, many of whom were working class, according to the photographer. And I think it is to me one of the more dispiriting images in the project. It speaks not only about this church, but in my mind, it also speaks about a larger idea that I see in American culture of the celebration of the powerful by the powerless. You know, a cheerleading role that the powerless take on for themselves to promote the better off. And I'm not totally convinced that that millionaire pastor needs our money. Or our support, frankly. He seems to be doing okay for himself. I think that there's another image in the book which is somewhat related by Juliana Sohn, and it's a beautiful image of a gentleman who is cleaning one of the Hollywood stars, you know, the little bronze plaque in Hollywood. He has no legs, but he's clearly, you know, working very hard to put food on the table. And I respect him for that effort. But again, what is compelling to me about it is the larger metaphor, this idea of the powerless celebrating the powerful.
And you've got a great quote from a billionaire equity investor who said that wealth gaps like the one that we're seeing right now, that they cannot last. What do you think he was getting at?
He says that looking back in history, this kind of inequality is fragile, and that through some way, through war or revolution or simply much higher taxes, you know, things will get equalized. We saw, you know, I think that there's actually a chorus of very wealthy people around the world who are starting to see that this is bad PR. You know, this is not going to help anybody, whether it's the poor, the middle class, or the wealthy, because if you get enough angry people voting in enough elections, you know, that wealth in the upper 1% might very well be challenged sooner or later.
Miles, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Miles Little is a senior photo editor at Time Magazine, and he's a curator of the 1% Project.
Coming up, we'll talk to guests from Arts Wisconsin and the League of Wisconsin Municipalities about the first annual Creative Economy Week here in the state. It started Sunday. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.